The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm your host, Sandy Jacobs. Co-host TJ Inman will be with us here shortly. We are breaking down the Indiana-Michigan game from yesterday. Indiana fell 20-10 in a hard-fought game against the number three ranked Michigan Wolverines in Ann Arbor yesterday in a snow game that was kind of cool to watch from the radio booth with the window open. Snow games in college are rare. So it was special to see that. Now we welcome in TJ Inman. TJ, how are you?
I'm doing well, Sammy. Yes, hard-fought game, I think, is a good way to describe that. Some very clear positives to take away from it moving to the season finale, but also, you know, a few negatives as well. And we'll discuss that, but I think the bottom line is that Indiana proved – again, that they are very capable of playing with the best teams on their schedule, but not yet capable of getting over the hump against them.
Yeah, it was a game where a lot of people were texting me, you know, hey, you know, they played hard. That was impressive. You know, that was big boy football, stuff like that. And it was for the most part.
Yeah, it's true.
But this is where you see – recruiting and depth come into play. TJ, you have, you know, Indiana's line is really banged up. You know, you don't have Demetri Camille for most of the season. Brandon Knight is out with a leg injury, and then you have other injuries as well. I mean, Jordan Fuchs is out, Sammy Cobbs is out, and those injuries added up, and you could see that even though Michigan was playing with their backup quarterback, and Okorn wasn't great yesterday, might not have even been good, and maybe been bad. But, you know, they had the depth and the talent around him to give the ball to a Davion Smith. They had a punter who, this game came down to field position and the punting game where, you know, Joseph Gideon, I don't know what it was. It was a tough wind day. It was a tough day in the snow, and you're going against Jabril Peppers. But he looked totally lost and overwhelmed by the moment. The average net yards per punt was 26.4. He had two punts blocked. He had one decent punt, which, you know, he rugby style kicked and bounced it out inside the 20. But other than that, you know, the 26.4 yards per punt, two of them blocked. Michigan's average starting field position was at their own 38-yard line. So anytime you're going to give the opponent the ball at their own 38, that close to, you know, midfield, you're in trouble. And I don't care who you play. You could be playing, you know, a high school team. If you give them the ball around midfield, they're going to take advantage of it. So to me, that's what the game came down to. I thought Lego played pretty well, given the conditions. Devine Redding just, you know, it was a typical Devine Redding game against a stout defense like Michigan. You know, 2.3 yards a carry. The holes were there, as you saw. You know, Camion got some yards. Alex Rodriguez had a big run. Ricky Brookins, you know, had a 7-yard run or a 6-yard run. So there were holes there. It's just you have to have the speed to get there and the footwork to get there. And Devine Redding, he is going to get 1,000 yards this year. It will be the first time since, I think, Von Dunbar to have back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons rushing. But he just doesn't – it takes him too long to get going against defenses like this. Where he needs, you know, 5 or 10 yards to get to full speed, where we saw the last 2 years with Jordan Howard and Tevin Coleman, whereas maybe, you know, a step or two and they're at full speed. So to me, you know, TJ, our goal coming into the game, what we expected was just play well, clean up the turnover issues, and get out of there relatively healthy. And I think they did that outside of the Devontae Williams ankle injury. He did not dress. Or he did not play, but he did not dress. I don't think he traveled with the team as well. So, you know, they're relatively healthy coming into bucket week. But was there anything else you took away from that game on Saturday?
Well, yeah, I mean, running back is now pretty thin as far as scholarship guys go. We do not know if Mike Majette or Devontae Williams will be able to go against Purdue. So hopefully at least one of those guys can get back. I think they add an element that they don't have, and there should be, you know, there should be some running lanes there against Purdue if this season's past games have been any indication of what the Boilers can do defensively. So that'll be something to watch as the week goes on. And it did slide. I don't know if it would have happened anyway if those guys would have been healthy, but I think that those injuries slid Kameon Patrick into kind of spot duty as a running back, and then we saw it work for a touchdown in the red zone, just the fourth rushing touchdown Michigan has given up all year. So that was a plus. I thought that the defense did a tremendous job throughout the game.
And a note on the defense, TJ, I think it's Pro Football Talk or PFF Talk, one of those websites graded out the game, and defensive tackle Nate Hoff graded out as the best player on either of the two defenses, and he had an outstanding game. As a defensive tackle, he had eight tackles, five solo, with a 1.5 tackles for a loss. That almost equals his output from last year. I mean, eight tackles as a defensive tackle, that's a monster game. And Pat Dougherty had a good game as well. So I just wanted to give Nate Hoff his due. Eight tackles for a defensive tackle is really outstanding. And, you know, credit to Mark Hagan and Tom Allen and the players for putting in the effort, because this was – one of our weak links on defense coming into this year, and they really have gone above and beyond our expectations.
Yeah, I knew that Hoff had a very strong game. I was unaware that it was that good. So kudos to him. And I mean, really, what stood out defensively was the level of pressure that Indiana was able to get, the level of penetration they were able to get against Michigan's offensive line. That was very impressive. A few tackling issues against Devion Smith, but I mean, he's a very good player. That was the disappointing part, was that they just were put into so many bad positions as a defense, where Michigan was in great field position, that it just eventually they were able to break a couple of big plays to get into the end zone, and that. I don't blame the defense for that at all. They were put in tough spots all day and did really, really good work to keep it to 20 against a Michigan offense that, you know, I think it's fair to say that they're struggling a little bit right now, but they still have a ton of talent. And I talked before the game about, you know, kind of a barometer for the secondary, comparing what Michigan did last year with Darbo, Chesson, and Jake Butt against what they do this year, and it's night and day. Michigan's passing game was completely irrelevant for the most part on Saturday.
Seven catches for 59 yards, and a lot of that might have to do with John O'Korn not being great, but the Michigan receivers were not running wide open downfield. They did not call a lot of pass plays anyway. Jake Butt did not have a catch, and he's arguably the best tight end in the country. And IU has had issues covering tight ends.
Yep.
He had, I think, maybe one or two targets. Jonathan Crawford made a great play. It looked like he had a catch and just ripped the ball out for an incompletion. The leading receiver was Ty Isaac, with 21 yards on a screen pass, I think. Other than that, you held J.U. Chesson to 2 catches for 12 yards, Amara Darbo for 1 catch for 12 yards. And other than that, nobody did anything in the passing game. So, you know, that's a reflection on Fant and A'shaun Riggins at the corners. And then some of the safety play as well with Tony Fields, who's been playing really well, and Jonathan Crawford, who's been solid. But there were a couple of concerns outside of the punt game, TJ. The first one is the red zone offense. IU got 10 points on their trip to the red zone, which relative to what they've done all year is good. But I think they're outthinking themselves a little too much. I asked Wilson after the game what was the thought behind that second trip inside the 10 with running Redding twice and having Lego with the keeper. And his explanation was we saw the guy crash on the first play, so on the second play, we told Lego to read it and tried to beat him to the outside, which, look, if you're going to run, the play call might be better, but you're now using Kameon Patrick in the backfield, so they feel comfortable enough with his knee to put him out there. It was successful on the first trip down there, and a touchdown down there really puts that game, puts the screws to Michigan. They had just drawn within 7-6, and Indiana marched down the field on a long drive, and if he gets 7 points there, you really make that crowd uneasy. It was a morgue at halftime. All the students left at halftime as well, so it's not just an IU problem, as Alex pointed out to us on our group text. But you really start getting these fans a little weary if you score a touchdown there. So I would like to see the Wildcat down there with Tyler Natee, and I like the look with Diamante at running back and Kameon back there as well, because there's just too many options, and Kameon has that speed that Devine Redding does not. But we'll see. They did get 10 points out of it. It's okay. And then the second issue I had was Jonathan Crawford on the late hit, whether or not it was an actual late hit. That's a play we have not seen in a long time that cost IU a chance at a 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9 to get Michigan off the field deep in their own territory, kicking into the wind. And that play sparked them, and really they were able to milk the clock down to about 2 minutes after that. And that play that's just a play that we haven't seen for a while, and that's a play that brings back all those memories of what IU football used to be, that they're undisciplined, they're choke artists and stuff like that, which is I don't think is the case this year. But that was the play that was concerning to me on that. But other than that, I thought the game, that they played hard, they played well. They did not turn the ball over, and that was a big emphasis going into this week and stuff. So I think you got to, as an IU fan, you got to feel pretty good going into Bucket Week, and we'll have all the Bucket Week coverage at HoosierHuddle.com and all the Senior Day festivities coverage as well. But going in, you should feel pretty good about this team getting that sixth win. It's just a matter of, are they going to be able to stop that trend of playing up and down to their opponents and really, keep the their foot on the pedal and effort against Purdue.
First point that you made, it's important to remember Michigan has the number one red zone defense. So this was a number one red zone defense versus, the last place red zone offense. So not turning the ball over, getting points, 10 of them, that's probably realistically the best case scenario you could have hoped for based on what Indiana had looked
you
like
got,
previously in the red
zone. You got 10 out of 14 points, which is okay relative to what they've done all season.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, that's settling for the field goal, which it was still a good drive. That was still a successful drive because Michigan had just gotten a field goal. You converted a couple of third downs to move yourself into that position, got a couple of nice pass plays, which were few and far between thanks to the weather, and a great Michigan secondary. I think that needs to be said. They play such tight coverage and do an incredible job at it that it makes every throw a real challenge. And I thought Richard Legault actually, you know, the stat line does not look good, but I thought he played reasonably well. He did not hurt IU, and IU really didn't beat themselves on Saturday. And I think Legault deserves some credit for some of the plays he made, which hardly anybody has made against that Michigan secondary this year. But I know it's frustrating to get down there in the red zone. I agree with the overthinking, perhaps, if we put Diamant in, they're going to know we're going to be running that zone play. So, you know, let's do it with Legault and try to catch him off guard. I understand that, but he just does not have the speed to beat that Michigan defense. Even if they were fooled, they would have recovered quick enough to tackle him before he gets anywhere close to the end zone. So I agree with that. I'd love to see T taking snaps because Diamant just doesn't hand the ball off ever. So I'd love to see T taking snaps. Diamant as a running back, and then Kavion Patrick back there is another option. It's a different look. It's a good wrinkle to that package. And I think I would love to see Kavion Patrick unleashed against Purdue. I would love to see that happen. Give him the ball 8 to 10 times back there. I'm not saying overtax him because you still need to be mindful of the limits that he has physically right now. But I would love to see him get the most work that he's had on Saturday against Purdue because I really think he could be a gigantic difference maker out of that package and offer a real glimpse of what's to come in the future. There was at least one obvious play. Diamant keeps it instead of giving it to Kavion.
That was frustrating. If he doesn't score, it's a big play nonetheless. Who knows if Michigan makes a tackle, but it has a chance to go a distance. And you know, I was talking to Buck Sewer in the radio booth about it, and I asked him, would that have been a touchdown if Diamant hands it off? Because it looked like the mesh point on the handoff was that Kavion was wide open, and he had daylight and he wanted it and all that. And then another misplay, and this, you know, the one knock on Lego I had was when they were going up-tempo, and IU's been awesome at going up-tempo and when that offense gets in rhythm, but they finally had Michigan standing around, not in position, and it ended up being an incomplete pass, but he had Ricky Jones wide open down the left side of the field, like wide open. It would have been a walk-in touchdown probably.
I forget that play.
I think he threw to Westbrook. He threw it to the right side of the field. It might have been Westbrook. The play was broken up. It was a good play by the defender. But, you know, he must have not seen Ricky Jones on that side of the field. But, I mean, it was like going back to playground football where you're jumping up and down like, hey, I'm open. And so that's just, you know, the thing. It's his first year at IU. He doesn't have all that much experience in this offense that Sudfeld had last year. And this is where all these bowl practices and getting 15 more practices are going to help IU building a program in the future. And, you know, to go back to my first point of the show was, you know, the talent difference and the recruiting difference. Michigan has gone to bowls for the last 50 years for the most part, and have had those extra practices. So not only did they recruit better players in their recruiting rankings, they have basically an extra spring practice to develop these young guys who are running on the scout team, who are redshirting, and then they get into they're further ahead than a team like IU and Purdue, who have missed bowl games and don't get those practices and don't recruit the athletes that Michigan can recruit. So getting to that bowl game, regardless of where it is, regardless of opponent, those 15 practices are the best thing to come out of it, other than the extra week of IU football. But those 15 practices are going to be key, especially with, you have some key guys graduating. You're going to need some of these linemen to step up next year. Guy like Sean Bonner at tight end, who should be back healthy but is redshirting, will get a lot out of these practices. So,
Max Morris, Lasker, the receivers. Yep.
Yeah, all these guys. And then, who knows what Cole Guest and those guys are doing. Cole Guest is probably going to redshirt, but he's probably healthy enough now to practice and get those reps in. So, you could laugh at being a 6-6 bowl team all you want. It is still a necessary step in evolving the program. And I think IU is slowly taking steps to going in the right direction. And this game just showed you how close they were to being there, but also how far away they are off off of some of these big teams.
Yeah, I think that's true. And then the one frustrating part for the defense, right after you go up 10-6, you've got them in 3rd and 8, would have forced a 3-and-out, getting the ball back at 10-6. You'd just gone on a scoring drive. Their offense was, like you said, it was a Morgan there, and their offense was
dead in the water, basically.
Disjointed. Yeah, had nothing going. Marcus Oliver breaks through the backfield, or breaks through the line. Again, Indiana getting great pressure and penetration against that Michigan offensive line. And John O'Korn wriggles away. You can call it a missed tackle, I guess. O'Korn wriggles away, runs for 30 yards. It fires him up, fires the crowd up.
Davion Smith scores from 34 yards out to go ahead.
And
that drive started with five and a half minutes left. So let's say you stop O'Korn there, and I had this as the turning point of the game in my rapid reaction. And if you stop there, you figure another, let's say there's 4.5 minutes left. You get the ball back. 3.5, 4 minutes left in the third. You could start salting away the clock a little bit and run your offense and open the playbook a little bit and start getting those tack on points that I talked about in the keys to a victory.
And
you really make it uncomfortable.
Deep in their territory. Yeah, they would have been punting at, the 35 or something? Like, is about where they were?
They were at the 36. And, say they made the sack, it would have been back, I believe, past the more like inside their own 30. So, and you're punting with the wind, right?
Right.
They were going from left to right.
Yeah,
they were punting
point,
with the wind. So who knows? You get decent field position. You could run some clock, add some points on it, and maybe put that game away a little bit earlier. So, it's always these little things, and special teams is something that the offseason IU is going to have to take a hard look at in terms of coaching, in terms of personnel, and maybe some practice habits. Because, it was
so
almost amateur hour out there on – Yeah, it was amateur hour on the punt team. Joseph Gideon, he has a big leg. He's a good athlete, but he was awful on Saturday.
Peppers didn't break one. That's a plus.
Well, that's because he
didn't
either
do
got
anything
blocked.
At all, really.
No, he had some decent returns. You could tell that he wanted one, and that if the ball didn't skip 14 times. In 20 yards, he might have broken one. But he had, he had 4 attempts at punt returns. He had 29 total return yards. He played well on defense. I mean, that's what he does, but he did nothing offensively. IU sniffed that out well, so credit to Tom Allen and the staff and the players for sniffing those plays out, especially that one in the red zone where he looked like he was going to throw, and they held him to a field goal. So, you know, overall, you got to take what you can out of this and then go into next week and, you know, unleash your frustrations on Purdue. All these close games that you've lost, and just, you know, leave it all out on the field on Saturday.
Yeah, it's I think, like you said, it's going to be very important for Indiana to, first of all, you know, I don't know how you do this, but they absolutely have to take the mindset that Purdue is not a bad football team that we can just go out there and roll the ball out and okay, let's just go take care of this, and then it comes, you know, middle of the second quarter and you find yourself down, you know, 17 to 6 or whatever. They have to come into it, and we've seen them have, you know, poor starts against lower level competition that has gotten them into trouble where they've had to play very well to come back and win. That's been a consistent problem. And then they play against an Ohio State or a Michigan and step it up and start out fairly well. But they've got to have that mindset. And then number two, Purdue has been a sloppy football team all season. They're the only team in the Big Ten that has turned it over like IU has. Indiana needs to be the cleaner football team and the more disciplined football team this Saturday. If they do that, IU is better than Purdue is, no question, and probably significantly better. If Indiana plays a clean game, I fully expect Indiana to win by a few touchdowns. If IU is sloppy, having costly penalties, screwing up in the red zone, turning the football over with fumbles or McGough interceptions, it'll be a test. I mean, they will turn that into a close football game with a whole lot more on the line for IU than for Purdue. You know, they've got a new football coach coming in at some point this offseason. That'll probably happen fairly soon after the Bucky game. They're not going to a bowl game. The only thing they're playing for is to get the bucket back, and I don't even think that their current players have much of an expectation of that. You know, I'm sure that they expect to win Saturday, or at least hope to, but Indiana has a whole lot more on the line Saturday, so they've got to be disciplined, got to play a clean game, and if they do that, I feel very good about what the outcome will be, but we haven't seen them play a clean game all that often. It's good to see that Saturday, though.
Yeah, they had a fumble in the last play of the game, but, you know, Feeney recovered it. So it's a turnover-free game, but you're right about Purdue. I've been watching a couple of their games over the last couple of days as well. You know, typical bad teams. They start off hot. You maybe get a little, you know, things going, and then in the second half they're done. So if you want to,
as soon as anything goes against them, it's done.
Yes,
they fold up shop.
So, So what? You're correct, and you know, IU getting out to a fast start. You know, Blau has thrown. He threw three more interceptions yesterday. I think that brings his total up to 19.
If I'm not mistaken,
19. You know, if you could pick off a few passes early, score some touchdowns, get out to a lead, you're right. You know, it is a rivalry game, though, so, you know, you never know.
Oh, sure.
You know, you could throw all the records out, you know, in terms of motivation. But, you know, Purdue hasn't had the bucket in 3 years. IU, you know, has won the last 3 years in a row, hasn't won four in a row since the 40s. So, they're going to tie the longest winning streak, I believe, in the bucket game for Indiana. So there's a lot on the line. And you know, probably these Purdue players, if they have any pride in their team, want that bucket back. They don't want to be the Purdue seniors or, you know, that Purdue squad that lost four in a row to Indiana to equal the longest losing streak in the bucket series since the 40s. And, you know, they're going to come out fired up, and they do have some playmakers. You know, Blau, as much as he turns the ball over, has a good arm. They have D'Angelo Yancey, who's their best receiver, who could go over the top. So Rashard Fant will have his work cut out for him. Markell Jones is a solid running back. He's banged up, though. You know, Jake Rapogal should be back for his final game, maybe, from injury. So, you know, there are some guys who, on this team who have a lot to play for and want to win. But you're right. This is a team that IU on paper is better than. And they're going to have to play like that and not start the game like they did against Rutgers. That game is, you know, what you can model this Purdue matchup off of. You know, Rutgers is not very good. The stats against that they had, if you're a stat head and listening to the show, look up Rutgers stats against Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. It's unbelievable. Those four teams, Rutgers didn't score against them. The opponents outgained them like 2,500 yards to 360. It's really amazing. If you're into stats, you know, go look that up. But it's a team that, you know, that IU started slow against, but because of the talent on the field, IU came back, was able to come back and win that game, you know, pretty comfortably. But, you know, this is a home game with a bowl game on the line for IU. You got to, you know, show up. And we'll break it down in more detail later in the week, TJ. Final thoughts on Michigan?
I think the positive we talked about, you know, the positives were played a clean game. I think the defense certainly has quite a bit to be happy about. From there, and you know, your red zone offense, it wasn't a total disaster, but I think the offense, really the main thing they can take solace in is look through a game without turning it over. We got through a game without real costly penalties. We did a nice job on a couple of drives against an elite defense. I think the offense can look at those things. The defense can look at the secondary, can be very happy with their performance. You can be happy with the front, I guess the front six, if you will, and the pressure they got against Michigan's offensive line. So, and Griffin Oakes hit a field goal, and the extra point. So that's a plus.
Yeah,
but I think
it is a plus.
You can look at that. You can say we're healthy. Yeah, loss. But now we got a week to get ready for Purdue. Win. We're going back to the bowl game. We get the bucket for a fourth straight year. Let's take care of business and get it done. Forget about Michigan. You move on. My takeaway from it is it's over. We're healthy as can be. Yeah, I mean, really, it's about as healthy as you can hope to be on the last game of the heading into the last game of the season. Yeah, you got some injuries. So that's going to happen. But really, nothing too catastrophic at this point. I think Simi Cobb's certainly a big loss, but for the most part, you're healthy, and you got one game to play for what you had hoped to get coming into the year, and that's all you can ask for at this point.
Yeah, I agree with you on all of those fronts. You know, put Michigan behind you, take the positives from that game, go into Purdue with some confidence that hey, we are better than them. Let's play like we're better than them. The injuries, you're right. You're as healthy as can be without any new major injuries. Losing Brandon Knight, losing Demetri Camille stinks. This is, you know, it's bucket week. It's time to, you know, this is what college football is about. It's a rivalry game. It's an in-state rival. You're playing for a trophy and you're playing for a bowl game. So, there's not much more you could put on the line for IU football. So we'll see how it shakes out. We'll have all our coverage on HoosierHuddle.com. One last point on Griffin Oakes. Yesterday, I thought it could have been a dangerous day to kick field goals He had built his confidence back up a little bit against Penn State. That weather was nasty yesterday, but you know he was 2 for 2. You know you're now you know 2 for your last 2 field goal attempts, and you hit all your extra points against Penn State as well. So take that for what it is, and move on, and hopefully, you know he's kicking extra points instead of field goals against Purdue.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll have our. The schedule with Thanksgiving coming up is going to be a little different. Probably we'll have our podcast on Wednesday to preview the Bucky game, and then we'll have content throughout the week previewing the game as well. So, TJ, thanks for joining me on a what had turned into a cold Sunday, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, I guess, like we said, we won't complain about the weather when the cold finally does come, because we had a very nice extended Indian summer. So I will not complain about the cold, but yeah, it's a bit chilly.
No complaints here. I like the cold and I like the snow. It's the 38 degrees and rain that is miserable. But anyway, that does it for today's show. Come back to HoosierHuddle.com often. Check us out on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. Don't forget, if you're buying holiday gifts, Christmas gifts, books for next semester, check out our Amazon portal on the website. You can either go through it through the Hoosier Shop ad on the side on the desktop, or the ad for Tom Brew's book On the Rebound as well. We get a referral bonus from your purchases. It helps us maintain the site, bring you quality content, and helps us with travel costs to away games as well. So we appreciate that. We appreciate you listening. And it's Bucket Week, so enjoy that. And we'll talk to you on Wednesday.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date.
Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.